Nashville weather, showers and thunderstorms today, mainly before 1 o'clock. Some could be severe with a high near 90 degrees. Right now we have thunderstorms in Nashville. The time is 9 o'clock. It's 77 degrees.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, from the campus of Pomona College in Claremont, California.
Pomona. Say it with me, won't you? Pomona. Do you realize what a mantra that can be to someone who comes from a part of the country where the towns are called Mattapoisett?
Come help us make Pomona's family weekend memorable, with memorable moments, and moments remembered.
I remember saying that it was what Scotsmen wear under their kilts.
It's all coming back to me now, yeah. You may know many answers from our upcoming quiz, but we think there's a few might stump you.
We have 10 fewer pickles than Heinz.
Join the fun next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. A day after Afghan President Hamid Karzai gave the first official indication that the U.S. is involved in talks with the Taliban, a suicide bomber in northern Afghanistan has killed 3 civilians and wounded 11 others. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports that it's also been a deadly weekend for NATO soldiers in Afghanistan, with 8 of them killed in one day.
The Taliban have claimed responsibility for the attack in Kunduz province, where a man drove a car packed with explosives into a convoy of German NATO troops. In their heavily armored trucks, the foreign soldiers suffered no major injuries. As with most recent insurgent attacks, Afghan civilians bore the brunt. Fighting across the country did claim the lives of NATO troops, including 4 that died in a non-combat related vehicle accident. On Saturday, a team of suicide bombers killed 9 people in Kabul. With the summer fighting season in full swing, U.S. troops appear to be holding the territory taken from Taliban insurgents last summer. The Taliban have in turn stepped up attacks against Afghan soldiers, police, and civilians. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Kabul.
A NATO spokesman says the alliance takes reports of civilian casualties seriously and that it's trying to establish if claims by the Libyan government are true. Libyan officials say a NATO airstrike hit a civilian house in the capital of Tripoli early today, killing several people. Fighting is intensifying, meanwhile, outside the main rebel stronghold in western Libya. Mohammed Tika is a doctor at a hospital in Misrata.
Situation today, there is too much cases injured, most of them serious injury, and about 6 people died, and the war is continuing. We are here, a lot of sounds of bomb here now near.
Rebels are trying to push toward the capital, but they came under heavy fire today from pro-Qaddafi forces. Egypt's interim prime minister says he'd like to see a delay in parliamentary elections scheduled for September until a new constitution is drafted. NPR's Eric Westerveld reports from Cairo. The prime minister's views are shared by a growing number of secular and liberal political parties in Egypt.
For weeks now, many of the political groups that emerged from the youth-led revolt that toppled dictator Hosni Mubarak in February have been saying that the political landscape here needs time to take shape and mature. Today, that view was supported by interim Prime Minister Essam Sharaf. In an interview with the Egyptian news website Masrawi, the Prime Minister made clear a delay is merely his personal preference. In fact, any decision to delay would be made by the secretive and autocratic military council that's currently ruling Egypt. Key in all this is that the next parliament will select a panel to draft a new constitution. Most secular parties here worry that a September vote would give undue advantage to the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood, the largest and best organized political force in Egypt. They fear that, in turn, would mean a new constitution with too much of an Islamist tilt. Eric Westerveld, NPR News, Cairo.
And you're listening to NPR News. Finance ministers from the Eurozone are beginning a series of meetings in Luxembourg today to discuss the crisis facing the Greek economy and the single European currency. They're looking at new loans and a second bailout package for Greece. Meanwhile, authorities in Greece are readying themselves for another big rally by protesters. Here's the BBC's Chris Morris.
As the Greek parliament prepares to debate a confidence motion called by a newly reshuffled government, protesters on the streets outside continue to express their discontent. Greeks are fed up with austerity, recession and debt. Over the past year, huge international loans haven't improved matters. They've only bought more time. Now Eurozone finance ministers meeting in Luxembourg this evening are likely to approve in principle the release of another set of loans worth 12 billion euros. Without them, Greece wouldn't be able to pay its bills next month.
The BBC's Chris Morris reporting. Today is a big day for 22-year-old Rory McIlroy of Northern Ireland. He's been setting records at the U.S. Open Golf Tournament, and now he's taking an 8-shot lead into the final round at the Congressional Country Club in Wildside, Washington, D.C. McIlroy's lead is double the one he had at the Masters 2 months ago, but he blew up in the final round. Now he says he's ready for his first major title.
I've learned a lot from all these experiences, and I feel as if I've had enough experiences leading majors and being up there that, you know, the time is right to go ahead and get my first one.
McIlroy's performance at the Open so far has invited comparisons to Tiger Woods' record-setting play at Pebble Beach 11 years ago. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org.
Let's bust a code.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Says You at Pomona College is made possible by the good folks at KVCR-FM in San Bernardino and the Lowe's Santa Monica Beach Hotel. Elegance on the ocean, steps to Santa Monica Pier. On the web at lowshotels.com/Los Angeles.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of Bridges Auditorium at Pomona College in Claremont, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. His modesty is legendary, his lifestyle simple. He just wants to be alone. Mr. Tony Khan. She's as humble as the day we started this show. At least that's what her people say. Francine Akbar. And he's the salt of the earth, the people's choice, a guy as regular as a prune farmer, Mr. Barry Nolan. And I guess they actually farm plums, don't they, not prunes. Who's the captain over there?
The humble man himself, Tony Khan.
Tony will be the captain.
I have one word that's been going through my mind pretty much since I knew we were coming here. Pomona. Pomona. Say it with me, won't you? Pomona. Do you realize what a mantra that can be? To someone who comes from a part of the country where the towns are called Mattapoisett, Warwick, Arlington, I'm glad to be here.
To my left, team two, his agent thinks he's in danger of being overexposed. A frightening concept when applied to Mr. Arnold Reisman. Her critics say she's at her best when doing her worst, Carolyn Faye Fox. And her friends say there's no one word to describe her, not this multisyllabic polyglot, Miss Paula Lyons. Who leads on this occasion?
I will do my best here. To do your worst.
To do her worst.
So go Carolyn will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. To begin, we are here this week to participate in the celebration that is Family Weekend. And in that spirit, let's play a round of Everything's Relative. For 10 points, please tell me what might be the story behind the following familial phrasing. Carolyn, what is meant by a prodigal son?
Prodigal son. That would be somebody who grows up, becomes a behavioral problem, and then returns home older and wiser and more respectful.
To a point, there's a little more to it than that. Do you know where it comes from?
Yes. I believe it comes from the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
That would be the New Testament?
It would be the Book of Luke, actually. That's right.
Okay. Yes.
There's just a little more to it.
It's the good boy who never left home that feels somewhat harmed or abused by the fact that the bad boy is welcomed back with such joy by the father.
There you go.
That's exactly right. 10
Thank
points.
You,
Very
Paula.
Nice, you guys.
Thank you, Ms. Bible.
I'm the New Testament gal on the panel.
It is from the book of Luke, the parable of the wastrel son who returns to his father's welcoming arms to the dismay of the faithful son. And very well said. Tony, why do carpenters often sister a beam?
Sister a what?
A beam.
Sister a beam. Well, the only thing that comes to mind is that Salinger, Raise High the Roof,
beam carpenters. And Seymour.
Sister of beams. Sister of beams. When you sister a beam, do you get it ready for something but not quite finish the job? Like hold it up so that it can be nailed in?
Not really, no.
Does it have to do with getting it level?
No, not really.
How about when it's joined by another beam?
Let's sister that beam with a notch.
Is it when you put two together?
Yeah. You know what? That's about as much as their carpentry skills are going to allow.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm still working on that tie rack from wood shop.
Yeah, that's right. I understand. Anybody on the other side know what sistering a beam is?
Well, yeah, it's when you lay them parallel to each other, and it's to offer stronger reinforcement, right?
Yeah, it means to affix new pieces of wood to the sides of other joists or rafters or beams to strengthen and support.
Right.
So that's what that means. Arnie, what is the difference between John Smith Jr. and John Smith II?
Oh.
One is a prodigal son tied to a beam. John Smith Jr. is the son of John Smith Sr., right?
Well, yes.
Smith II is just, there have been generations in between the first John and the second John.
That is the largest factor. There's also one other difference between them. Do you know what it is?
When the senior dies?
No, that's not it.
When they're cousins?
Cousins.
The biggest difference is the fact that generations can occur between John First
and John Second.
And John
Not between John First and John Junior.
Yes, that is a father-son relationship, but there's one other big difference. Do you have any idea what it might be? You got about 8 points for this.
John the Second doesn't actually have to be directly related to John the First, though, right? I mean, it could be far removed in the family.
That's not the other difference.
That's not what you're going for.
No, does anyone on the other side?
Yeah, in my experience, it's an income of over $5 million.
Would it have to do with the middle name?
Yeah, it would have everything to do with the middle name. The middle name can be different. The middle initial, the middle name can be different in John Smith II. But if you're John Smith Jr.,
you have exactly the same name as
your father.
Okay.
All right. We get 8 points.
8 points for that. Very good.
I guess that too.
Francine, what does it mean when we say something or someone is grandfathered?
Oh yes, I have some experience with that. Unfortunately, I was not grandfathered. But,
I'm sorry to hear that.
In union negotiations and union shops, people who were employed before a certain point in time often are entitled to certain protections and privileges that do not accrue to those who came later.
Hence it can also apply to land deeds and development regulations, all kinds of things.
It's a legal term, right?
Yes. And
a thing that pre-exists the regulation will be accepted in the state in which it's in, as opposed to being subject to new regulations or requirements.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
10 points. Nicely done. To be allowed to maintain a condition or circumstance beyond, previously accepted but now not permitted.
We have an oil tank that was grandfathered, actually.
You have a what?
An oil tank
That was grandfathered.
Yes.
We have a 1,000-gallon tank sitting on the floor of our basement.
You know, I don't want to remonstrate, but we changed from oil to gas. So the guy comes in, and he says, well, we got to take the oil tank out. And I said, fine, take it out. And he says, that'll be $1,000. And I said, what for? And he said, well, it's hazardous waste. And I said, how come you didn't tell me it was hazardous waste when you were pumping 300 gallons of it in my house every week? $1,000 to do this? Sorry, and for those of you who want his name afterward, I'm happy to provide that. This one I loved. Try this one, Paula. Why, when we, and I'll give you a lot of leeway on this, because this is really hard. Why, when we surrender, do we say uncle?
Uncle.
Oh, what a good question.
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, thanks. I worked hard on it.
Why do we say uncle? Well, this has nothing to do with Bob's your uncle, our other favorite phrase, right?
Yeah.
The British phrase, yeah.
Why do we say uncle?
Uncle.
I really don't know.
You look like a wuss saying auntie.
We say auntie.
Auntie.
Okay.
Auntie.
Yeah. I'm, yeah.
So,
uncle.
Uncle. I don't know. Where did it come from?
Uncle.
Anybody know
Cry
on
uncle.
Our team?
I don't know. It has nothing to do with a funny uncle. Right?
Funny uncle. Funny.
If someone's going to do harm to you, it's usually your uncle. Is that what this is from? Or?
No. I.
Okay.
Boy, there's a frightening thought, don't you think?
Well, take a look at their restaurant.
Where could it be from? Barry has some wild guesses. Uncle Tom's Cabin. Uncle, what could it be from?
Is this have anything to do with literature?
No, it doesn't really, but right. I'll tell you, it goes back a long way.
Oh, so it's not American?
Uncle Pharaoh!
No,
it's the Dutch word for help. Uncle! Uncle! What?
You know, believe it or not, I'm giving him points for that. That's how disgusting this is. Nothing whatsoever to do with the, anything.
It's a Dutch word for I give in.
I'm going to give you a lot of leeway. This is hard.
Uncle. What's uncle?
Uncle.
What's in French? Is it another language we're saying?
Yes.
It is another
What language is it? How about that for a hint?
Does the language start with F?
Oh. Okay, it's Latin.
Did it have
to
do? It is Latin.
It is Latin.
Okay, it's Latin.
Uncle.
Yeah.
One clay.
One key.
I'm going to count to three clays, and then you're going to drop my arm.
Well,
un clay.
Is that a key?
You know, I'm going to put a stop to this right now. Anyone on the other side have any idea? Say uncle.
Okay, well, I'm
Anyone in the audience know?
Who knows?
Many say it dates to Rome, where bullies would force children to say patru, which means my paternal uncle, because such men held the same rank as fathers in family. The maternal uncle did not, so it was a call to respect. Respect me as your father. And so when they were sitting on top, pounding downward, they were saying patru, respect patru. Me as your father.
And this got translated as uncle later by some...
Well, it
Person?
Meant my paternal uncle.
Okay.
Right. It's not a great explanation.
No.
But it was... Then why don't... I mean...
You agree?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then...
Why don't we yell my patru, my patru?
Well, then, because it sounds like
daddy.
You're sitting on something.
Well, then give him 6 points for the bad jokes in the Latin.
Yeah.
And give him 6 points for that. And we'll go to Barry. Barry, what exactly is a kissing cousin?
Now, a kissing cousin would be somebody that is technically a cousin, but is far enough removed so that...
You can marry her.
You can take them as a date to the reunion.
That's exactly right. A relative sufficiently distant to allow for marriage. In colloquial America, it was an eighth cousin.
Eighth?
An eighth cousin.
You mean you couldn't kiss your seventh cousin?
I didn't even know I had a seventh
cousin.
Yeah. An eighth cousin. Today it means...
That's strict.
Yeah. Today it means a close friend considered to be family.
Would that would that be a fourth cousin twice removed? Is that... Because I've been trained by my wife after 18 years, I'm almost able to tell the difference between a first cousin once removed and the family dog.
Yeah. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Pomona College Men's Blue and White. It is the first... Oh, thank you. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points up for grabs to Tony, if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he cannot. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word louster. L-O-U-S-T-E-R. Louster. Gentlemen?
I can dim the lights and sing you songs full of sad things. We can do the tango just for two, just for me and you. I can serenade and gently play on your heartstrings. Be your ballerino just for you, I'll be your one true.
Saves You kicks off the summer at the Basin Harbor Club in Vermont's Champlain Valley with our first ever outdoor extravaganza. On Saturday night, June 25th, the whole Says You gang heads outdoors for two evening performances of the show. Then on Sunday, June 26th, we head outdoors at noon for two rousing rounds of wordplay. Tickets, information, details, everything available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Come join us for Says You. Al fresco. Says You returns after this from home.
On Talk of the Nation, we'll help you learn more about a topic, even one you thought you knew inside and out, like this caller.
I'm learning more about where I was from this show than I learned from when I was there.
I'm Neil Conan. For the context of the story, listen to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
PRI's The World brings you voices from around the globe.
I never felt, you know, that being Muslim and being an Indian are two different things.
It's your daily source for international news and a gateway to cultures beyond our borders.
When we say somewhere over the rainbow, it's here. It's in Buenos Aires.
I'm Marco Werman. Join me right here for the next edition of The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
You can find a listing of our schedule at our website at WPLN.org. Support for Says You on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from the Ryman presenting Always Patsy Cline, starring Mandy Barnett and Terry Myers, every Friday through Sunday through July 24th. Details and information online at Ryman.com. The time is 9:23. It's 74 degrees in Nashville.
When is Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That is the Pomona College Men's Blue and White. Thank you very much, guys. They're giving us a few moments with the word louster. We will go first to a smiling Carolyn Fay Fox.
Louster is not a lightweight jouster. A louster is not, as I thought, a lobster loaded with parasites. Although I like that definition. Louster is a form of animal vocalization intended to communicate readiness for mating. Louster.
If that elk is all fired up and ready to go, He's likely to louster. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay, a sound almost indicating animal readiness. He's a louster, and thank you very much, by the way, for the grace with which you gave that definition. Arnie Louster.
A lobster with parasites. No. Actually, it sounds too easy, because this must come from watching a lobster with parasites. Or listening to other crustaceans, because you know how they move? They basically move hurriedly, they scuttle, they scramble about, they bustle and hustle. They're loustering.
What?
They are loustering when they do that. When a lobster lousters, it bustles, it scurries, it scrambles about.
A bustling lobster.
A loustering lobster.
I would like my eggs loustered, please.
Yes.
It's the it's what he's doing, the process, right?
Yes, he's
the
scrambling.
Lobster is loustering. He's scrambling about,
scrambling
bustling
about.
Around. Okay. Could be that. Or, Paula, something else.
Well, actually, a louster is a poison.
A poison?
It's a poison. This is someone who, he's the person in a crowd who instigates the crowd to riot. That's the louster.
Ah.
There's almost always, you know, a precedent-setting nutcase in the crowd who will instigate a riot. That's the louster.
So, Jerry...
There he is! Get him!
You lied! You said him!
Mom, I told you to please keep it quiet during the show.
So Jerry Rubin would have been the consummate louster. He's the instigator, the one that fires the crowd up. So it is either someone who fires the crowd up, the bustling around of a lobster, or an animal sound signifying readiness. It is one of those three, and the choice, Tony, is yours.
Well, not just readiness. Readiness for mating, apparently. And frankly, I think an animal is as likely to mouse louster as he is to smoke a cigarette afterwards. So I'm going to pass on that one.
Oh, dear.
What Paula confused me when she said it's a poison, I thought she was going to refer to somebody from Brooklyn. I got totally off on that. I can't remember what she said.
She said a person who instigates
a riot. An instigator.
I'd like you to consider that.
I will consider it while moving on to Arnie's, which for some odd reason I think is the right one, if only because of the way he picked up on what Carolyn said.
The psychoanalysis.
What?
As if he might possibly have been looking at what she wrote, but pretending not to.
It's probably the animal vocalizations, but I hope it's the person who instigates the riot.
I just think that seems so appropriate, an instigator. Too appropriate for this show, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know the word rouster?
Yes, right.
Yes.
All the more reason to wonder if it isn't just playing off of that. I think it's scuttle or bustle, for no good reason, which is usually the case. Is that all right with you guys?
Francine and I vote against you, but go ahead.
Okay. Listen, it's on me. It's on
all
me.
Right.
It's on my shoulders.
Okay, you're on the island by yourself.
All by myself, louster.
Okay.
Out on the end of the limb there, all by himself, is the captain. Staring and I told you so square in the face, he says that loustering is to bustle or to scramble about. That was your definition, Arnie. Is that what it means?
I don't know what is the matter with his brain.
Loustered, perhaps?
But as it is, you got the right answer.
Ah. 10 points for Tony's team.
Yeah, you did.
Well.
What's it say? What's it actually
It says
say?
To bustle or scramble about.
Shiver my sisters.
He just stuck the lobster in there to confuse
us. There he goes. Very good, Tony.
Like he always does.
Let's go on to round three. 4 years ago, a handful of women from Pitzer and Pomona colleges formed an equestrian club.
And since then, they've become an irrepressible presence in the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association. So dedicated are they to the sport that they pay show fees, registrations, and lessons themselves, often by working as ushers for events like this one today. Thank you very much, ladies, for participating. To honor that dedication and to thank them for that participation, we offer a round of common horse sense. For 10 points, please answer the following equine inquiries. Carolyn, why are a horse's ears excellent equine mood indicators?
Why are they excellent equine mood indicators?
Yes.
Because the position of the horse's ears will tell you what kind of mood the horse is in.
In what sense?
Well, if the ears are laid flat against the back of the neck, the horse is not happy.
This is true.
And if they're forward, it means the horse is alert and listening and is very receptive to what you might tell it.
What if one's going one way and the other's going the other way?
Then the horse goes both ways.
That's exactly right. 10 points.
It's open to argument. It's not being receptive?
Yeah, they generally, the horse's ears point in the direction of the horse's attention.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Both ears pricked forward may look pretty, but when you're riding, you want at least one ear back on you. Listening to what you say, ears pinned back indicate anger or fear, and ears moving back and forth often indicate uncertainty. You know, is that true, ladies? That's, okay, good. So we have verification of our answer here, but Tony, once and for all, do horses sleep standing up?
Do horses sleep standing up? I know they give birth lying down, so they don't mind, you know, lying down for some purpose every once in a while.
They sleep standing up.
I think they do.
They do.
You know what they do? They pretend they're cows, and so they pretend they're sleeping standing up.
You know what? For one of the worst answers possible, that was a good 10 points, yes. They do. They sleep standing up. However, they nap lying down. Do you have any idea why that might be?
In the sense of evolution, one would assume that if you're sleeping while standing up, should a predator approach, you're able to get going away from it more quickly.
That's exactly right. Very good, Jerry. That fills out the 10 points. Yes.
So what does it mean if you're napping and one ear is bent backwards?
At night, they sleep standing up. They can lock their legs and balance even unconsciously. Actually, I can balance unconsciously, but that's different. As prey animals with straight backs, it's very hard for them to get upright in a hurry. And so nocturnally, they would be alert and standing up, whereas during the day, they can be guarded by less drowsy herd mates, so they can flop over and take a nap. But yes, they do sleep standing up. Arnie, loved this question. My father's advice on horse ownership was never own anything that eats more than you do. But that what are the 6 key steps recommended when buying a horse?
6 key steps.
You only need to get 5 to get the 10 points, but see if you can
do we start with the old look at the teeth?
That's part of it, yes, but it's a little more general.
Look at the upper teeth, look at the bottom teeth. Look at the tongue.
Let's get a little more general than that.
Look in the mouth. Looking a gift horse in the mouth.
Yes.
You check out his 4 hoofs, his mouth, and the other side of him, and you're done.
Boy, I got a horse you should look at then, because...
Well, I imagine you should be looking at his legs.
I mean, we're city people. Richard.
Yeah. Ask Francine. She buys horses.
Well, step two is decide what you're looking for, so that's
part of it.
Well,
how much he weighs, tall he is, what?
Yeah, age, weight...
Personality.
Can he dance?
Does he do dressage?
Yeah,
does he
can he move?
Does he lick
does
on
he
the first
day? Does he respond to commands? Does he have a dowry?
Oh, the heck with it, 10 points.
Uh,
You would want to ask what his previous employment was.
Exactly.
Because if it's a racehorse, it might not be the right horse for your five-year-old child.
Well, it depends
exactly.
on what you're buying
Exactly. Very
for.
Good, Francine. You have any other...
Yeah, you know what I'd do? I'd look to see if there was anybody on him at the time. Because he might own it or not necessarily want to sell it.
Yeah.
Might fight you for him or something.
Would you look at the hooves for any
reason? I knew this question was trouble the minute I wrote it, but I...
Yeah.
The six steps that they recommend are learn and practice horse skills, decide what you're looking for, line up prospects.
Prospects? Were you buying the horse to sell it?
Yes. Interview potential candidates.
Get
a second opinion.
Those are your prospects.
And finally, take a test drive.
This sounds like college admissions.
Yes, it does. I don't know, but we'll give you the 10 points because that'll put an end to that.
Hope he doesn't throw up. Yeah.
I love interview potential candidates. You know, I
interview
love that
potential
one.
Candidates.
When did you decide that you really wanted to be a horse?
I'm yes.
Francine, why does a good hay inspection require you to stick your hand down into the center of the bale?
Because if it was wet, it might have mold on it.
I don't know how she knows this, but she's exactly
horses.
Right.
She buys horses.
There it is.
The horse person.
That's true. That is exactly right. Feeding moldy hay can cause colic to make sure it's... actually, you're sticking your hand down to make sure it isn't warm rather than wet, because that would create the moisture problem. But that's why you do it. Paula, why do you need a good farrier? F-A-R-R-I-E-R.
Because the horse needs regular adjustment to his shoes.
And the farrier, of course...
is a blacksmith who does the shoeing of the horse.
He's actually more than that, but 10 points. Very good.
Close enough for a city girl.
He's actually... it's a bit of a retail to the farrier. He supplies the shoes.
I thought a retailer is a furrier.
That's a furrier. And finally, Barry, what's this thing between horses and pigs?
What Francine, your horse ever date a pig?
I guess I'm hoping that it's a fence.
That's our answer, offense.
Is this anything like horses and goats, that horses enjoy the company of goats and are soothed by them, and maybe pigs are even better conversationalists?
It's almost exactly the opposite.
Horses are alarmed by pigs?
Now, ladies, is this correct? It's it. So they say it's
Why?
Correct. Not only do horses not like pigs, the pigs aren't that crazy about the horses either.
But what? But
they're
sure
short.
It's a bad smell.
That's exactly right, Paula.
There you go.
What?
According
smell.
To
bad
the
smell.
According to our sources, horses generally dislike the smell of pigs, and for their part, pigs can't believe that anything that big can be so uninteresting.
Well, who likes the smell of pigs?
Now, is that true?
Pigs.
Yeah. All right, well, horses don't...
But nobody
don't...
likes
How
the
can
way
you
pigs
tell
smell.
What, horses yeah. don't have thumbs.
Why is that so unusual for a horse?
Two hooves,
what?
Like this.
Their ears
there
keep
you
going.
Go. Okay.
I don't know, but as far as we can tell, horses just do not like the smell of pigs.
And what is it pigs don't like about horses?
No, I'm not quite sure about a pig's reaction to a
Too
horse,
big.
But that's what they said.
Okay.
All right, well, that was pretty good. And ladies, once again, thank you very much for your participation as ushers at this event. We really do appreciate it. Give them 5 points for their answer. 5 points will kind of work it out. And let's go on to round four, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word ballycatter. B-A-L-L-I-C-A-T-T-E-R. Ballycatter. Folks?
Dare, 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 dare.
Just a quick reminder, late this June, Says You kicks off the summer at the Basin Harbor Club on the Vermont shores of Lake Champlain. On Saturday night, June 25th, the gang goes outdoors for two evening performances under the stars. Then on Sunday, June 26th, it's outdoors for a matinee and two more rousing rounds of wordplay. Tickets, information, and details are available at sayu.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, with money short, new calls to bring the U.S. military home from all over. We'll ask, could it be done? What would it mean? Plus, deep inside the New York Times, a new documentary in the future of the press. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
So, maybe you've been searching the malls for some tools, maybe a nice tie. Well, this year, get him what he really wants. Snap Judgment, the Father's Day special, Big Papa. Stories about how he treated you so well when you were little. Stories about how he treated you so badly when you were little. Snap Judgment, Big Papa, the Father's Day special. Come get you some.
Saturdays at 7 a.m. and again Sunday night at 9.
You can find our complete program schedule at WPLN.org. Support for Says You on WPLN comes from Catravon and Bailey Public Relations, aligning interests and building relationships, and creating success for local, regional, and national clients on the web at kvbpr.com. And by the generous support of Nashville Public Radio members, you can join our community of supporters by making a tax-deductible contribution online at nashvillepublicradio.org. Time is 9:41, 70 degrees in Nashville.
I see you smile there.
That is the Pomona College, Men's Blue and White. I want to take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That is Brendan Novak, ably assisted by Mr. Benjamin Scher. Thank you, gentlemen, for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word ballycatter. We will go first to Tony Khan.
For reasons that I am fascinated by but don't know, there's something about being an informer that tends to make people use animal analogies, like a snake in the grass, or a wolf in sheep's clothing, or a stool pigeon. Well, ballycatter is also one of them, an informer, someone who spreads false rumors.
False rumors.
Someone who spreads false rumors is a ballycatter. Could be that. Or, Francine, something else?
Well, a ballycatter is actually a job going back to the era of the tall ships which sailed across the Atlantic. Mm. And the ballycatter was the sailor who was sent up the rigging to remove ice from the rigging on a tall ship.
The ballycatter was the guy that took the ice off the rigging of a tall ship. Well, that could be it too. They both sound logical, don't they?
But, it sounds like too much.
But Barry, it's probably yours. And what is your definition?
Well, oddly enough, the real definition does involve ice. It's interesting how ice gets all these different names for all these different varieties. And ballycatter is the ice that forms on the shore and the docks from ocean spray. You may recall there was a famous Popeye cartoon where Olive Oil goes, "Oh, Popeye, how will we get all the ice off the dock to make it safe to walk?" And Popeye just says to her, "That'll be a swift kick in the ballycatter."
And who doesn't remember that deathless line?
You know, you don't hear that many Popeye invitations on public radio, and I think we're all the worse for it.
We're all the better for it.
Yeah. So it is either ice that forms on, what does it form on from spray?
It's the shores and the docks from ocean spray.
The shores and the docks get that ocean spray, and it turns into ice, and that ice is Ballycatter. It's either that or the guy that goes up the ringing and up the rigging and gets the ice off the rigging, or it's someone who spreads false rumors. It's one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
Well, if it were someone who spread de-icing material, we'd be all set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of a word we had a while back, Bonnie Clabber.
Yes, I remember that.
But I don't
that.
Think there's any...
Do you remember what that meant? Yeah.
It means like a curdled milk.
Spoiled milk.
Oh, yeah.
Have a glass of Bonnie Clabber.
Although I think I remember saying that it was what Scotsmen wear under their kilts.
Yeah, it's all coming back to me now, yeah.
I'll tell you, informer sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Ballycatter, someone who spreads false rumors. I think I might go with that one.
The ice is sort of, the two ices are canceling themselves out in my brain. I don't know. I can't believe there's anybody that goes up a tall ship rigging to get rid of the ice at the top.
Why not?
Why? Who cares?
Just out of curiosity.
Who cares whether there's ice at the top? I'm liking Informer.
Informer.
I'm not. But
no?
Oh,
here
we go.
What do you like, Paula?
I cannot make a strong case, but I'm not liking Informer.
What do you like?
Tall ship ice?
No, it isn't
wide
that.
Wide dock ice? Or,
it isn't that. I just... For some reason, don't think it's Informer, but I have no other choice. So let's just...
Carolyn, go for it.
We're going with Tony.
Tony, they have come to the conclusion that Ballycatter is someone who spreads false rumors. Is that, in fact, what Ballycatter...
Not to draw this out any further, please make up a definition.
Oh, wow.
That was a fake definition. Someone else was telling the truth. Audience, what do you think? Well, ice. Yes. I think the rigger took that one. Francine, that was your definition as the Ballycatter, the guy that goes up on the icy rigging.
Ballycatter, please make up a definition.
It is not. Because it actually is.
Ice that forms on shores and docks from ocean spray.
Is the Ballycatter. Ten points.
And
for Tony's
I would like team. To point out, while they probably don't do a lot of sailing around here with ice on the rigging, it's not good to have ice on the rigging.
No, it isn't.
Makes it hard to move the sails around.
Let's go on to round five. It would hardly do for us to visit this lovely campus and not devote a round to letting the rest of the country in on a few things, particularly Pomona. So... So for 10 points, please tell me why this audience will gasp with recognition when I ask the following questions. Carolyn?
Yes.
There is a particularly labyrinthine residence hall on campus named Oldenburg Hall. What role does it play in American popular culture?
Star Trek.
In what way?
Star Trek, The Next Generation. It's the Borg people.
How does he know this? It's exactly what the Borg people.
Yes.
That is how do you know this?
He does his homework,
I
honey.
Do my homework.
Oldenburg Hall. Do you know why?
Wasn't there a guy who graduated from here who then went to work for Star Trek?
Joe Manosky lived there as an undergrad before going to write Star Trek. Oldenburg Hall is the inspiration for, they say, the Borg.
Was it the foreign language dormitory or something?
I'm sorry?
Yeah. It was the foreign language dormitory.
And also because students often disappear into its walls, seldom to be seen. And because its cube-like structure is visually intimidating, whatever, resistance is futile. Try this one, Tony. Pomona's mascot is an endangered bird called the sage hen. Why might this creature not exactly inspire fear in opponents?
Because of the echo, I'm going to give you two wrong answers.
Okay, fine.
Is it an endangered species?
It is.
It's, so they haven't done a bang-up job of surviving.
This is true.
Isn't that enough?
Right. Yeah. Almost.
Look out for our team, the spotted owls.
The sage
and the snail darter coming at you. Does it have anything to do with the way they react to stress?
It has everything to do with it.
They freeze.
They commit suicide.
Yeah.
They run in.
Fine, I don't care. 10 points. It's, does anybody know up there what their reaction to danger?
Well, they run. How about that?
Yeah, they run all right. They run in circles.
Yeah.
Oh. They run in circles.
Yeah. That's good.
You may not know what they're doing, but you're pretty sure where they're going. You know? But because the mascot is the sage hen, can you folks do for me the fight cheer? Chirp, yes, a very loud...
Chirp?
A very loud chirp.
Chirp. Chirp.
All right, Arnold.
Yeah.
Since you say you've done your homework,
no.
Let's give you the real killer. Mm. Pomona students attach an almost mystical significance to the number 47. They say it is the quintessential random number appearing more in our lives than any other. Can you give me three good examples?
They have to take 47 courses to graduate.
Is that... That can't be true, right?
Oh, well.
That's a great guess. You're getting points for that.
It was founded in...
I thought it's that number that you can't divide or multiply or the prime integer. Isn't that one of the things?
Is that part of it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
see,
part of it. So
that's one.
Did you happen to see what exit we got off of the 10?
47.
Exit 47
that's
is another
47
one.
47 exit. Okay, so prime integer, 47 acres. 47. No,
I'm going to give you the 10 points for being good sports. That was good. Audience, give them a few. Well, this is what we have, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. There are 47 sentences in the Declaration of Independence. True?
No.
No. Okay. How about this one? 47 strings on a concert harp.
No.
No. Okay, that one's wrong, too. 47 miracles biblically attributed to Jesus.
True.
True. Oh, that one's true. 47 degrees between the tropics.
Between the tropics?
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, yeah.
And if all this is giving you a stomach ache, remember that Rolaids absorbs 47 times its weight in excess stomach acid.
Rolaids.
All right. Francine, early in the spring, Pomona students engage in a ritual that would be completely impossible at either Dartmouth College or Miami University. What is the ritual, and why might I have chosen those two schools for this example?
Is it related to the weather?
It is, in fact.
Take it, Francine.
Well, Miami.
It is all about the weather, and that's why I picked Dartmouth and Miami.
Does it have to do with what blooms or what fruit maybe?
No, that's not it.
Hanging from the bough.
I'm going to give you some points for the weather. Any help from the other side?
Does it have to
do with... The swallows.
Oh, they go skiing in bikinis.
Skiing in bikinis.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they go skiing in bathing
close,
suits?
Close, actually. Folks, what is it? It is Ski Beach Day.
Ski Beach Day.
You can go from one to the other.
That's exactly right.
That's right. You go from the beach to the mountains, yes.
Yep, they glide down Mountain High Resort in the morning and boogie board at Newport Beach in the afternoon.
Yes.
Has anybody out there actually done this? Oh, there's some ski... See that? In the back of the room, I noticed. Yes, there's... A lot of them. Ski Beach Day is a tradition here, and you can do them
Why
both.
Why didn't we go to college here?
Who knows? All right, Paula, try this one. Your surroundings may help you a bit here, or perhaps your knowledge of Latin. Who or what was Pomona?
Oh.
Who was Pomona?
Arnie, you're the one who did the homework.
No, I didn't do that kind of homework.
Why not?
Who or what was Pomona?
Who or what was Pomona?
Who was Pomona?
Juan Pomona.
Juan Pomona.
Ramona Pomona.
Well, remember,
Ramona.
The
Latin god of fruit?
I think it's time to concede,
well,
Richard.
You know,
is it
Carolyn,
a grapefruit?
Is it?
It isn't the Latin god of fruit.
Goddess.
Yes.
I think you led the witness a little too aggressively.
I think I may have.
No, it's...
I'm going to give you 4 points there. Anybody on the other side know?
Goddess.
It's the Roman goddess of fruit.
And the harvest. And also,
harvest.
Get this, the mother of pruning.
The mother of pruning.
Am I not right?
The mother of pruning.
Wouldn't that be plumbing?
Who was the father of pruning?
Right.
Plumbing.
The mother of pruning. And finally, Barry, my favorite question of the day. From October 15th to November 12th, 1961, Pomona College experienced a success and notoriety few other colleges in the country have ever experienced. What was that success?
Did it have anything to do with sports?
No. Good guess.
Well, 1961 was
JFK,
yeah. That was a period when I see that Frank Zappa dropped out of here.
He did.
Does it have anything to do with that era of?
Well, it has to do with that era, yes, but not Mr. Zappa.
Does it have anything to do with Sputnik?
No, what a good guess, though, Tony. You'll get points for that. That's an interesting...
Does it have something to do with pop culture?
In a way, yes.
There...
Well,
that doesn't narrow it down much, does it?
I'm going to go to the... I'm going to throw this open. Anybody know over there?
Nope.
Something happened for 4 weeks?
Yep.
And it's not that somebody went
and
to...
And it was a great thing that happened... Anyone in the audience, and thanks for playing this, guys. Give them 4 points for being good sports about it. Audience, do you know what happened? They were the undefeated champions of the General Electric College Bowl, five-time winners, and they didn't face any patsies. We're talking about Amherst, TCU, and a lot of other schools in this college prevailed in the General Electric College Bowl. Congratulations, guys. Undefeated champions. You know, you played pretty well, Carolyn. You amassed 78 points, and on most days, that'd be a winning total.
Not today.
Big three-figure total for Mr. Tony Khan's team. Winners this week. Congratulations, Tony. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Neil Girard, Kurt Beardsley, and all the folks here at Pomona College. And Mr. Duncan Lively and all the folks at KVCR in San Bernardino. Scher and Salk and other writers, Mark Holden mans the meters, and Zachary Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. We close with this particularly grisly newspaper headline, Local High School Dropouts Cut in Half. I agree it should be discouraged, but thanks for showing up, Pomona. See you next week.
Join the fun, we'll bust a minor one as we warble merrily.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions Radio Stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our program channels, including our newest service, Classical 91.1, at WPLN.org.
Farmers markets across the state offer the opportunity to purchase locally grown, freshly picked fruits and vegetables with information about where the food was grown, how it was grown, and even the farmer who grew it. Heirloom varieties, local favorites, and requests for next year can be made to these farmers. From now through August, Tennessee's fruits and vegetables are at their peak. Listings for farmers markets across the state are available at picktnproducts.org.
Nashville weather for today, showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 1 o'clock. Some could be severe with a high near 90 degrees. Right now, it's 70 degrees in